Today, we're going to talk about China. So much talk in the news, trade war, global economics, and actual war. Today, we're going to break down the history of China's economic model and expose their vulnerabilities and give you tips to help your portfolio prosper. Stay tuned.
It's time to make the dough rise, the financial podcast with Brian Doe.
It's another episode of Make the Dough Rise. I'm Walter Storholt alongside Brian Doe, of course, certified financial planner at Livingworth Wealth Advisors, serving you throughout the Lake Country and beyond with an office right in Greensboro, Georgia. But no matter where you are, we're glad that you've taken the time to join us on today's episode. Brian's going to bring his 2+ decades of experience as a practicing certified financial planner since 2013 all to the table on today's show. And looking forward to this one, Brian, as we kind of dive in a little bit into some of these global politics and some of these global economic forces. Seems like we've been dabbling into the global talk a little bit more often than normal over the last couple of episodes.
I was just going to say, we've touched on this before, and but as we're recording this, let me just kind of timestamp this episode because a lot is happening. And over the weekend, today is Monday, May 12th. It's about 10:30 in the morning. And as we record, the news has broken out about a trade deal with China over the weekend. The markets are on fire here this morning, last time I looked anyway. And I don't know the details yet, so I'll be curious to see what happens. But it'll be interesting to see how things shape out. Maybe this is much ado about nothing, and we'll get back to smooth sailing here. Last week, we had the major trade deal announcement with England, and I thought that was really interesting because that also ties into a lot that we've talked about. It's the first major benefit that England has capitalized on since Brexit, and they had done a very poor deal of creating trade relationships and negotiations with the EU and the US post-Brexit and hadn't really taken advantage of that. Now they were able to break away from the EU, create a deal directly with the United States and ally themselves very, I would say, advantageously with us. So it's exciting times. There's good stuff happening, and we'll cover a lot of that today.
Yeah, fantastic. Looking forward to diving into all of that. Before we get into the meat and potatoes, how's life treating you otherwise?
It's going well. Got all the kids on the mend with their surgeries, and we got finals coming up, AP exams, all that going on, and then hopefully we'll roll into a nice relaxing summer.
Very nice to hear. I'm sure you'll have some fun updates for us on future episodes as we go through the summer. Looking forward to hearing all about that. Well, let's get down to business. Since there is so much happening and swirling all around us right now, Brian, as you said, literally a lot of news over the weekend. We're recording this on May 12th, 2025. And so you're probably listening to it just a few days later at its published time. So, you know, who knows what's happened between now and that period of time, Brian, but certainly we've had some momentum, it seems, gaining in the markets a little bit. And take us through some of the context for today's conversation.
Well, one thing that I wanted to draw focus on is China's economic model and the actual threat that they do or don't pose to us and to the global economy. And where I'll start is with Japan's history of economic development. And if you roll the tapes back to the 1940s, post-World War II, you know, Japan was in a very poor state. They did not have the big automotive industry. They weren't known as the bastion of top quality production that they are today. But they had grown in such economic dominance. Most of the people listening to this podcast will recall in the 80s, everybody was running around saying, oh, we're all going to be working for Japan. They had bought Rockefeller Plaza and they were taking over everything, and they just looked like they were going to be so economically dominant. And then the reality of a pure export-driven economy was exposed. If you're going to purely export and not buy stuff back from us, all we can give you is dollars. And at some point, your capacity to deal with those dollars bursts out into, we have to go buy something, and they came over and way overspent on real estate and global acquisitions. They grossly overpaid for other companies and, you know, high-profile buildings and real estate sites in the U.S. And then it really collapsed And if you go back and look at Japan's growth trajectory and particularly their stock market, from the late 80s until maybe just, I would say just a few years ago, their market ran flat for about 30 years. So there's great opportunity to build a foundation with this model, but at some point you have to grow up, open up to the world, and become a fair trading partner. China has very much followed that model, and everybody thought, you know, that they would grow up and play nice one day. But they, I would say they are a lot, they are looking a lot like Japan is in the, was it in the late 80s. Okay, very economically ascendant, but a collapsing demography. So they, Japan has a tremendous shortage of young people and this heavy reliance on foreign markets consuming their products. Well, China has had the most rapid industrial rise in history. It was Japan on steroids. And in 20, 30 years, they went from, you know, very, very poor post-communist collapse type structure to this rapid industrial powerhouse. And the advantage that they had was lots of cheap labor, and they basically became the manufacturer for the world. But the whole time, they were never a true free open market. They don't let their currency float. They don't let money come and go from the country easily. And that starts to distort and manipulate markets. And if they're not going to open up and play nice, we've let them in the World Trade Organization. We gave them most favored nations status. We've done all these things to really help China. But at the end of the day, they continue to just copy and steal intellectual property, designs, products, innovations. They make knockoffs and resell them. And this is just, it's just gone on too long. And if you look at every major successful Chinese company, it's a copy of a U.S., you know, counterpart. They're Google, they're Amazon, they're eBay. You've got, you know, the, I guess like Walmarts and whatnot, or the Temus and Sheens of the world, Alibaba, you know, all the names. They're all just copies of the U.S. And if you have a closed and captive society of a billion people, you can get away with that for a long time. But the censorship and lack of, you know, access to the rest of the world, I think, is eventually going to catch up with them.
With rise comes risks, right, and challenges, and that's what we're seeing a lot getting exposed these days as well, as we kind of have this battle and this race with them.
Yeah, they I will give the Chinese credit. They do take a very long view. They've got these long strategic plans. And if you have one centrally run government and party system, you can get away with that as long as they're making the right decisions. The problem is eventually they start misallocating capital, or if they punish people who aren't delivering the results they want, there becomes a fear that grows. If there's incentives to lie or manipulate data to get access to resources, you're seeing a lot of that, I think, take place within their system. But the biggest problem they have was, for years, they had the one-child policy. And part of it was thinking, gosh, we've got all these people, we can't afford to feed them, we're just going to end up with forever starvation. And so they implemented a one-child policy where, you know, and enforced it, you know, very heavily. And if you think about it, demographic replacement, you need a birth rate of, like, I don't know, 2.2 or 2.3, 2.4 per couple just to keep up replacement. Well, they cut that down to a collapsing rate of one. And because of that, there was a desire for more males than females. You actually had infanticide against females. And so they have this very skewed population now that inverts. They have more old people than they do young people, and they have more males than they do females. And I don't know what you've heard, Walter, but despite what you may hear in this country, men cannot have babies.
This is true.
Sorry, I just had to point that out sometimes. But anyway, they're very prone to, if anything begins to go wrong, well, you've had this, you know, reliance on cheap labor, and if that advantage goes away, you maybe begin losing opportunities. You get people more prosperous and educated. They want more and better jobs. They don't want to be working the same maybe manual type labor jobs that, or agricultural jobs that their parents and grandparents had. And so there's some dissatisfaction amongst the youth. Then they've got other problems. They've had major real estate collapse over there because the only real asset they were allowed to invest in was real estate. There are more houses in China than there are people. And if the population's collapsing, that only spells one thing for the value of this property or what they thought was their investment. They have currency controls. There's tremendous silencing of billionaires and, you know, or the prosperous that are opposed or have in any way expressed any dissatisfaction with the political party. And the number one case is Jack Ma. You remember Jack Ma, don't you?
Yeah, remember that.
So great guy, very involved in tech, but he was speaking up a lot with some opinions about maybe China, the economic model they were following, the politics. And suddenly he got a talking to and just sort of dropped off the radar around the world. And last I heard, he was giving talks at elementary schools and is very much out of the limelight. Other billionaires have not been so lucky. They've actually just disappeared. So my point is they are not a capital-friendly place. If you are not going to be a, you know, true free economic flowing, you know, money moving in and out, free floating currency, you're not going to attract global capital like the US does. Then the other thing is we're seeing a lot of changes in indicators and metrics coming out of China. And they've basically stopped reporting statistics, right? So if everything's good, economic growth is great, and they report it. But all of a sudden, you are not seeing youth unemployment rates reported. Soy sauce production, it was dropping, and they quit reporting that. School bathroom designs and numbers of stalls in school bathrooms. The population was actually revised down by 100 million. Something in China is not what it appears.
It opens up the eyes a little bit to try and understand all these different indicators. And the fact that you've got to kind of take some of these things with a grain of salt, right? Because we don't have kind of the free media that we're going to see in the United States. And so you have to kind of take every piece of information that's coming from China with a bit of a grain of salt.
Well, you have to be concerned when there's not transparency. You know you have some opacity with what is being reported there. They don't follow our accounting rules. They don't have the SEC out, you know, making sure the financial data coming out is up to snuff. And when the government is in control of the statistics, they can publish or not publish what they want. But it's telling. You have to read between the lines, I guess, and say if they've stopped reporting the data, why is that? Well, because it's probably not very favorable. So I don't know that for sure. I'm just guessing that would be the case.
Interesting. So where does that take us as you kind of continue to look at some of these challenges, both the rise and now these risks that they're facing?
Well, the geopolitical risk is the one that everybody likes to talk about as well. You're familiar
a whole
nother
with angle.
Taiwan, right? I mean, that's the big one, China, Taiwan. I don't want to go into the long history of how Taiwan separated out from China, but basically it was a bunch of dissidents from the Mao's Cultural Revolution area. They wanted a more free economic and political system. So Taiwan was created. It's never really been recognized as a country because China has always claimed it as a renegade colony or something like that, outpost. And there's always been talk that China intends to retake Taiwan, much like they did Hong Kong. Well, they've had the war games going forever. I was actually in Taipei in 1996, and it was, they had the ships out in the waters and firing missiles and doing it. And that stuff's been going on forever. And, you know, I don't know that it turns into a hot war. I think you would actually have to look at something like Hong Kong, And I was in Hong Kong in 1997 for the turnover, you know, back to China. And if you look at the trajectory of what's happened in Taiwan, it was not a hostile, aggressive, you know, takeover. They just very slowly crept in, and the lease was up with Britain. That was the main reason they had the opportunity to take it back. And they let the pro-democracy and the Western laws all stay on the books for about, well, they said they were going to leave it alone for 50 years, but by 25 years in, they had pretty well rooted out any opposition, and they'd gotten pro-Chinese people into key positions. They really kind of come in from the inside out to do their takeovers. They do not have a strong history of imperialist invasions, hot wars, and things like that. So if war actually broke out and you had some kind of true existential threat to China militarily, you know, things could go nuclear, and it's not going to end well for anybody. But for Taiwan, there's two things there that pose the big opportunity and problem: semiconductors and democracy. And there was general consensus back in 97 that, oh, now that China had Taiwan or China had Hong Kong back, oh, it was just a matter of time. It was sooner rather than later that Taiwan would become part of China. And I had one of the professors there who was an Indian guy from Australia that taught at one of the universities there. And he said, the Taiwanese are not at all interested in joining back with China. They have democracy. They have a free society. They are not interested in giving up. And they're going to put up a bigger fight than people might think. And then the semiconductors, that would be a great capability for China to have. But the simple fact of the matter is China does not have the engineering capability to run and produce those semiconductor factories that are there. So if it was a true hostile takeover and they, you know, bombed everything and, you know, made enemies out of the people who are producing the semiconductors, they're going to flee, and China's going to be left with basically the same capabilities in that sector that they have today. It's interesting. It gets a lot of talk, but I don't think there's that much there. And we're seeing more semiconductor manufacturing coming back to the U.S. So I think if you take the semiconductor manufacturing capability from Taiwan and move it to the West, you've basically got problem solved.
That's nice. And that leads to, I guess, kind of a conversation of, you know, how does the U.S. play into this equation as more attention kind of gets turned inward to the U.S. in various facets? You know, how are we shaping up in some of these areas, or where do you see our edges in some of these things?
Well, it's interesting. I had a good friend who was at a cyber conference and security and protection type event the other day, and man, he came out of there just scared to death. He's like, oh, China could shut down our grid and they could hack into all of our computers and then they take over all this stuff. And maybe so. I would argue maybe we could probably do the same thing to them. But to me, the actual threat is in the cyberspace more so than the geographic space. But think about it for a minute. If you had if China did shut down the energy grid here, I mean, that would be paralyzing and in chaos, but also an act of war. If you had an actual act of war, China is very, very vulnerable in two places: energy and food. Well, it just so happens that that's one of the U.S.'s great strengths and key advantages. And so let's just say that China did, you know, do something like that to attack or provoke the U.S. Two things would shut things down very quickly in China. You shut off the oil shipments coming from Russia that kept come all the way around the, you know, through the West to get to China, or coming out of the Middle East. You shut down the Red Sea and the Straits of Malacca. They're going to be starved for energy real fast. If we're providing exports of food, and Brazil and other Western countries are big exporters of food and and grains to China, cut those off, it's not long before you have a dark, cold, and very hungry China. And that is not going to be a very favorable position for them to operate from. So my conclusion is very, very pro-America. Let's quit whining and complaining and talking about all these great threats. America literally can do whatever it wants if it sets its mind to it. And you know, we've got tens of millions of people wanting to migrate here, arguably maybe billions. And if you would set up a good legal work and immigration system like Canada or Australia has done, they've got great models for that. And you can bring in plenty of workers and younger people to continue to grow this country. That's one of the other great advantages the U.S. has, is our demographic collapse is nowhere near what it is in Europe and Russia and China and some of these other countries. And then as far as investments, you know, if this trend continues and we do see the repatriation of capability, increase of manufacturing, build out of semiconductors, artificial intelligence and robotics, aim your investments there. That's my big takeaway. Quit worrying about, is Baidu going to be the, you know, going to have a pop? Is the post-COVID growth story for China? Just, the information is all bogus. We have no idea. They're, you know, they're not playing fair. So let's hope this tariff war that Trump started is actually a temporary and negotiating tactic to dislodge the unfair practices that, you know, China has been engaged in, and give people incentives to bring the higher tech, smarter, like I said, robotics and AI and semiconductor industries back to the U.S. I think there's no upper limit to what we're capable of when you pair that with our abundant, cheap energy, ability to, you know, more than feed not just the population, but, you know, great parts of the world. And then, you know, geographically, our transportation infrastructure, nobody can compete with it. So to me, the story is the U.S., not Europe. Yes to Britain. Yes to Japan. Yes to Southeast Asia. And India will be the interesting one. So those are my takeaways.
Always giving us things to keep our eye on and watch, Brian, and I definitely appreciate it. And if you find yourself trying to make sense sometimes of what's happening in the financial world and how it relates to your own portfolio, your own financial plan, you can always take better control of your financial future by reaching out to Brian Doe, tenured certified financial planner with more than 20 years of expertise. Let him be your trusted partner through the planning process. Brian is a certified financial planner professional, meets all the highest standards of training and ethics, always putting your best interests first. If you'd like to, you can take advantage of a complimentary 15-minute call with Brian to gain clarity on those financial goals and prepare for a more secure tomorrow. Don't miss out on the opportunity to do that, especially in today's tumultuous financial times with so much in the news. You can go to livingworth.com and click book a call. That's livingworth.com. Click book a call. Or you can call 706-451-9800. That's 706-451-9800. Well, Brian, great episode today. Thank you for all the help, and can't wait to catch up with you and connect again soon.
Sounds great. We'll look forward to it.
All right. Sounds great. That's Brian and Walter. We'll see you next time right back here on Make the Dough Rise.
Make the Dough Rise is brought to you by Living Worth Wealth Advisors, with a central office in Greensboro, Georgia, but serving the Lake Country and beyond. The podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all your favorite podcasting apps. Subscribe today and never miss an episode. Just search for Make the Dough Rise with Brian Doe. You can also visit makethedoughrise.com to listen to recent episodes. If you'd like to contact the show or schedule a complimentary financial review with Brian and the team, just go to makethedoughrise.com and get in touch through the website. Or call 706-451-9800. Thanks for listening to Make the Dough Rise.
Investment advisory services offered through Main Street Financial Solutions, LLC. Information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information is obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accurateness and completeness cannot be guaranteed.